Verdi, Tchaikovsky and Johann Strauss II provide the music, arias from Otello and Eugene Onegin, amongst other musical delights, all of it live from the Royal Albert Hall at 3. Before then, we're going to explore the world of Franco-Flemish music of the 16th century through the imagination of a founder member of the Talis Scholars, who themselves were at the proms earlier this week, providing a late prom celebrating their 40th anniversary. Catherine Bott talks to Donald Gregg in just a moment. Not only is he a founding member of the group, he's also a novelist, and his latest book is set against that fertile period of early music. That's in a couple of minutes after a summary of the news this lunchtime here on Radio 3. A tense standoff is continuing in Cairo between security forces and supporters of the deposed Egyptian president Mohamed Morsi. Soldiers are surrounding a mosque where around 100 people are refusing to leave following yesterday's bloodshed in which more than 170 people died. The UN Commissioner for Human Rights has criticised the police for using live ammunition to deal with the protesters, but also said that the demonstrators should bear some responsibility. Afghan officials say militants armed with automatic weapons have killed 10 people in the west of the country. Most of them were construction workers who were shot while they were asleep in their camp. A policeman was also killed. Efforts are continuing to recover the bodies of scores of passengers drowned when a ferry sank in the Philippines. Divers are searching the wreckage of the Thomas Aquinas, which disappeared beneath the surface following a collision with a cargo ship. Several hundred protesters have joined a camp outside an exploratory oil well near Balcombe in West Sussex. The demonstrators say they're supporting local people who don't want drilling to take place. The exploration company, Quadrilla, has already suspended its operations on the advice of the police. It insists that nothing done at the site will damage the environment or wildlife. A British woman has drowned while on holiday in Lanzarote. She'd been swimming off Famara Beach, which is renowned for its strong currents and riptide. The Spanish police say they don't believe that two women from the UK arrested for drug smuggling in Peru were forced into it. Melissa Reed and Michaela McCollum Connolly said they were threatened at gunpoint and told their families would be killed. The government has dismissed claims that continued meddling by ministers has harmed schemes aimed at getting young people into work. The local government association says there's been a fall in the number of young people benefiting from the projects. And the weather, wind and rain will spread across all parts this afternoon. It'll brighten up in northwest Britain, though, later, but stay wet with gales in northwest Scotland. And that's the BBC News and the weather. It's just coming up to 3 minutes past one. Next, this afternoon, the Early Music Show, which today focuses on a new novel by the singer Donald Gregg. It's introduced by Catherine Bott.
Hello, my guest today in the studio on the Early Music Show. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to read from the blurb in his new novel. Donald Gregg is a singer, writer and sometime lecturer in film studies and musicology. A performer of early music, he's particularly associated with the Talis Scholars and the Orlando Consort, of which he's a founding member. So, Don Gregg, welcome. When Time Will Tell came out last year, I absolutely devoured it. And not for a moment did I think, as I read it, gosh, a singer has written this novel. It's not a writer. Has it been well received?
It seems to have been, yes. That's very kind of you to say that. I have to say I'm actually blushing here. Under
my tan.
I also have to say you must have a rather poor opinion of singers, of which you are one yourself, so it's hardly fair to say that.
And it is a very nuanced book you have written, in part on this multi-layered story, about a travelling group of early music singers. So you are writing about what you know to a certain extent, but you've woven into it a sort of tragicomedy about musicology and a really detailed insight into what it's like to have been a contemporary of Josquin, which leads me nicely to our first music.
Thank you.
Nymphes des Bois, Nymphs of the Woods by Josquin des Prez, sung by the Orlando Consort. And in there is the voice of my guest in the studio today, Donald Gregg. That piece and that composer have an important role to play in your novel, Time Will Tell. Josquin isn't the only composer who plays an important role. Explain all.
Well, the other composer about which the piece is written is Johannes Ockeghem, who in many ways was the father to the generation of Josquin and Compère and Brumel and de la Rue, all of whom are named in that poem. That's a lament on the death of Ockeghem, written by Josquin. I think it's one of the great pieces. The poem itself is very moving as well. It exhorts those four composers to lament their great father, their bon père, Ockeghem. He was a very important figure. He was not just a composer, he was also a treasurer of this great institution, collegiate institution, I should say. And I've taken that framework and composed a novel around it. I've taken three of the composers in question, Compère and Josquin, taken them as the feuding, let's say, brothers, and Ockeghem as their father, only in a figurative sense, that Ockeghem is the person to whom they look. And in the modern day, someone discovers a manuscript which has on it a grand piece, which is to say a piece in possibly 32 parts. And this musicologist wants to unravel the history of it. So I tell the story of that in the 15th century. That's a memoir that explains that. And then we cut to the modern day with an American musicologist saying how annoying it is because he loves Ockeghem, but everyone prefers Josquin. He would love everyone to love Ockeghem, which is his research subject. And then we cut to an English group performing exactly that same piece in Newcastle in a concert hall.
In the creation of the modern-day English early music vocal group, you have come up with one of the best group names in the history of the early music movement.
Or the worst.
Go on.
Well, it's a pun. They take their name, as groups often do, name themselves after a composer, but they do it in a jokey way, so they call themselves Beyond Compare. Boom, boom.
Well, we're going to hear a substantial piece by Compère. It cites several of his contemporaries in the text, including not only Ockeghem, Josquin, and he puts himself in, but there's Dufay is mentioned as well. This is a Marian motet praising the Virgin Mary in the first half of the piece. The second half of the piece beseeches her to pray for the souls of composers. Omnium Bonorum Plena by Loise Comper, sung by the Orlando Consort. And with me is Don Gregg, author of Time Will Tell. Now, we've heard your singing voice in the first two tracks we've played in the programme today. And obviously, the next thing we've got to deal with before we get on with the mechanics of the book is how autobiographical is it? I just opened the Time Will Tell at random this morning. And here we are, something that might have fueled you, I felt. Touring itself proved to be a very different kind of bonding exercise to the stage show. The shared experience of constant travel and daily uprooting to a new city brought them closer together, their individual exhaustion displaced into expressions of care and concern. Each of them saw tiredness only in others, their senses dulled by a constant flow of caffeine, alcohol, and adrenaline. Exhausted as they often were, tempers were nonetheless kept, and an addictive, wild-eyed enthusiasm for experience prevailed, as if this was their first and last tour. Now, that is written by a man who knows.
Touring certainly was one thing I wanted to write about and enjoyed writing about, because, as you all know, there are many anecdotes which define and indeed propel us forward when we're on tour, and we enjoy retelling. I mean, everyone likes talking about those occasions when such and such a thing went terribly wrong or terribly right, usually wrong. It's much funnier that way, of course. But there were other factors as well, such as, for example, performing with the Tallis Scholars when the Strigio 40-part piece, a much later piece than the Nokiga Majoskan, was discovered. The idea that you could come across a manuscript which everyone had thought was lost, and it could fall out, in this case, of a... it was simply misfiled in the Bibliothèque Nationale. Again, with the Orlando Consort, we had a piece that was discovered by John Dunstable, which had literally fallen out of a book in Estonia, of all places. So I liked the idea, the nuggety idea, of someone discovering a manuscript in the present day.
But you could easily have written a novel, a sort of baritone meets soprano, loses soprano, gets, you know, whatever.
Well, that's in there as well, of course.
Yeah. But you do make quite a lot, not perhaps suitable for a family show, of the fact that Josquin really was not a nice man by his
contemporaries. I'm rather unfair on Josquin, I have to say. But, I mean, if anyone's reputation can survive, it's clearly Josquin's. He writes the most sublime music. We don't know anything really about the characters of these people, or at least we can't believe anything we read about their characters. There are a couple of anecdotes about Josquin which were written about 50 years after he died, but one of them is about him berating a singer, and I thought that was enough to then make him not a particularly pleasant
person. Definitely in my book. But he was very good at writing musical puzzles, and you've chosen part of his Missa L'Homme Armé.
Yes, it's, as you'll hear pretty quickly, there are several canons going on, and the two upper voices, you'll hear them chasing each other very obviously. But actually what's also very interesting is the framework on which it's built. There's a very solid bed of two very slow-moving voices, a tenor voice and a bass voice. And the bass voice is singing the chorus of the L'Homme Armé backwards in very slow units and then forwards. And the tenor is singing the verse of that forwards and then backwards in retrograde. And there's a moment where the music seems to stop, actually. It doesn't, it carries on, but you'll hear it very obviously, all the canons above it stop. And that's the moment at which the whole thing turns around in a beautiful mirror moment and starts again.
the final part of the Agnus Dei from Josquin's Missa l'Homme Armé, sung by the Talis Scholars, directed by Peter Phillips. So, Don, are you in there too?
I am in there. I can't remember which part I was singing, actually. I think I was singing the second part up.
How important do you think it is, if you're listening to music like this, to know how clever Josquin has been?
Absolutely irrelevant, really. It's there to be found if you want it. I love that kind of stuff. I love these patterns and tricks. I think it's really interesting. But I certainly wouldn't start from knowing how it works and then listen to the music. Just enjoy the music. It's beautiful stuff.
But what about modern singers? Do you find yourselves all looking at each other knowingly and sort of, ha-ha?
Oh, yes.
Coming up here.
We can hardly hold the mirth back. not quite the case. It's the kind of thing you might get some smart person nodding to someone else and saying, oh, of course, this is you noticed the acrostic, didn't you? And the other person going, what? Why? What's his problem? So, no, I think, I mean, most singers, as you'll know yourself, are interested in the music, and I think most of us are fascinated by what these composers were like. Because, I mean, when you perform this music, I think it's difficult not to be interested and try and imagine what these people were like. They're creating beautiful music, so one's inclination is to think of them as interesting people. May not be the case. Take the very small details, such as, I mean, I like the fact that Josquin's father was thrown in jail for beating someone up, and the fact that his uncle was a brewer. I mean, those two little pieces of information for me then created a whole series of ideas about what Josquin might have been like. But it's spurious at best, but very enjoyable.
One of the very attractive ancillary benefits of reading your novel, Time Will Tell, Don Gregg, is that there are composers who are known to us now, Ockeghem, Josquin, Compère, Dufay, and all these names from the past, who, thanks to the early music movement, are easily available on a selection of CD recordings. So you can actually back up the reading of the novel, as we are rather doing in today's programme, by listening to the music. And the composers, to a certain extent, appear as characters. And we're now going to have a piece by Johannes Ockeghem, which has a rather instructive title, Prenez sur moi. I mean, very loosely translated, follow my lead.
Follow my lead, yes. And he does that with the music as well.
It's another puzzle.
It's a canon, this time at the interval of the fourth. And in fact, it's the first known canon at an interval other than a fifth or an octave. So it's a very clever little piece, another one. But I mean, again, it doesn't matter what the actual form is, but it's one of those in-jokes that he's playing, and any singer picking up the music would only have one text and one line of music in front of him and would simply be told in another instruction, sing this distance later, at this pitch, and then it'll work, and it does all work out.
Servo Domini.
The Orlando Consort with Johannes Ockeghem's Prenez sur moi. You're listening to the Early Music Show with me, Catherine Bott, and in the studio with me today is Donald Gregg, singer, polymath, author of Time Will Tell, a novel which is set simultaneously in modern America, modern Britain, and the past of Josquin and Ockeghem. How respected were composers like Ockeghem and Josquin?
Ockeghem was immensely respected. When he died, there were two poems, major poems, written about him, and people, diplomats and so on, and people in high places said marvellous things about him. Likewise, Josquin. But a lot of these composers weren't really. I mean, they were all singers. That, again, is an interesting thing for me. They earned their living by singing. They didn't earn their living by composing. They didn't get paid for composing. It was something they did on the side. In fact, in some ways, you could say that Josquin was really the first professional composer, the first person who actually got paid for writing music. They all did benefit from this thing called benefices. And we're talking about composers who lived in what is now northern France, Belgium, Holland, and so on. They all tended to travel to Italy, where they were employed by dukes and so on, and indeed by the Pope, got paid fairly well. But a lot of their money came from being attached to churches in their home countries, where they had to turn up once a year and got a regular stipend. And then a lot of them came back again and tended to go back to where they were born and died there. I mean, that was the case with Dufay. It was the case with Josquin as well, with Compère. These people were priests often. I mean, Dufay was a priest, Josquin, Ockeghem, they were priests, but they were also writing absolutely disgusting poetry and setting it to music, ribald stuff.
We're moving on to drinking. You've chosen a piece which, an anonymous chanson, which seems to be all about alcoholic debauchery. that can occur after concerts?
Yes, I've never known it happen myself, of course. I mean, we all go straight to bed and generally have, well, maybe a game of Scrabble and some Ovaltine.
Yes.
But it has been known for people to go to a bar, perhaps, and sample some local beer or wine.
Well, when you are in the Low Countries...
It's important to acquaint yourself with local customs.
I think it's vital. It's a branch of musicology, really. So what's in this piece that made you choose it?
There are two composers who are mentioned, Robert Morton, who was an Englishman who travelled, he was in the Burgundian court, and Henna van Giesechem, which is not easy to say. And this is a story about them having a party, and they played on loud instruments, so loudly, in fact, that it could be heard in Metz, which is about 22 kilometres away.
Let's hear the Orlando consort in La Plus Grande Chiere.
La Plus Grande Chiere.
Mortal et paix.
The Orlando Consort, in raucous mood, in La Plus Grande Chère, an anonymous composer referencing two well-known ones who got up to no end of fun. One defining similarity between all the composers featured in your novel. We don't know much about their lives, but we do know they were all blokes. But you are striking a blow for equality in your book, because the director of Beyond Compare, this wonderful vocal group, is Emma Mitchell.
Who's female, as you say. Yeah. 15th century.
I cleverly spotted
well
this.
Well done, well done. 15th century, you know, no women were allowed in church at all. Certainly no female singers. Now, as you know, there are many female contributors to the early music movement, the modern early music movement, but in 1997, at least, I'm sure there were no female conductors of early music
groups.
And
that's when your novel opens,
isn't it? That's when it's actually set.
Yes.
Cynically or caustically, I could say that the reason I did it was because I didn't want to offend any of the male conductors who might otherwise employ me. But actually, I really like the idea of there being a female conductor in charge of an early music group, and I hope that I hope we'll see more.
Well, the next piece we're going to hear is by Dufay. He wrote one or two pieces of real sort of homesickness. This one we're going to hear now, it's he really regrets having to leave his home country behind because he's leaving behind his friends, women, and the best wine.
His favourite local wine. It's much like British singers, you know, leaving behind their warm beer. But as I say, there are many other very fine beers to be sampled around the world. But it is a beautiful lament, really is.
Adieu,
Gothic voices directed by Christopher Page, singing a tender lament for his homeland by Dufay. Where are you next off to?
Actually off to Spain next week, Peníscola, to sing outdoors English music from the courts.
Will there be another novel on the stocks?
Well, you're
not a one-book man, are you?
No, I definitely have written other novels. It's now a question of getting them published. But they won't be about only music. Certainly the idea of writing something with which one is very familiar is a good way to start, but I quite like to branch out and actually write a novel which forms out of another experience.
I look forward to that. We're going to have a final piece of music. The novel describes a large-scale motet lost, apparently, to history. So I suppose we should finish with another piece that was lost and now is found, Spem in Allium itself by Talis. It illustrates the scale of the piece you write about, doesn't it?
It does. And I mean, Spem in Allium, most people will know about. It's one of those grand scales, and whenever it's performed, it's a grand occasion. And one of the reasons one might write a large piece like this is simply because you can get a lot of people together and have a lot of fun.
The 40-part motet Spem in Allium by Thomas Tallis, performed by the Tallis Scholars, conducted by Peter Phillips, and including on the very bottom line the singer Donald Gregg, who was Catherine Bott's guest in today's Early Music Show. Well, you can find a playlist with details of all of the music chosen in today's programme on the Radio 3 website. And the programme was produced by Helen Garrison. It's 2 o'clock. This is BBC Radio 3. Time now for a second opportunity to hear last Monday's Proms Chamber Music from Cadogan Hall. This is an edited version of the concert. It was presented by Petroc Trelawney.
A warm welcome back to our weekly BBC Proms Chamber Music series. Today, a programme of vocal works from three generations of British composers. Gustav Holst, who boasted Latvian, German and Irish blood, was born in 1874 in that most English of towns, Cheltenham Spa. His daughter Imogen, Edwardian by birth, a pianist who became a composer, assisted Benjamin Britten and was artistic director of the Aldborough Festival. And one of today's most distinctive and distinguished musical voices, the Lancashire-born composer Sir Harrison Birtwistle, the UK premiere of a work that takes him back to a childhood fascination with moths, the Moth Requiem. More about that later. Well, members of the BBC Singers who give this lunchtime prom are gathered on stage here at Cadogan Hall, shortly to be joined by conductor Nicholas Cock. Imogen Holst's Hello My Fancy, Whither Wilt Thou Go, in about 20 minutes' time. That'll be performed in between motets from the 15th century Eton choir book. First, Holst the father. Though he set much Christian music, he was also fascinated by Hinduism and Sanskrit literature. He set four groups of choral hymns from the Rig Veda, the most important of Hindu scriptures, and taught himself Sanskrit in order that he might translate them into English. We're going to hear the third set, four pieces for female chorus and harp. Though filled with very distinctive Eastern musical sounds, there's also something very English about these pieces. Hymn to the Dawn, Hymn to the Waters, Hymn to Vena, the Hindu king, and finally Hymn of the Travellers. Like the journey makers of the title, the music gradually disappears at the work's conclusion. So to join harpist Lucy Wakeford and women's voices of the BBC Singers in set three of Holst's choral hymns from the Rig Veda, please welcome conductor Nicholas Cock.
Thank you. Yeah.